Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And okay. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. Thank you, everyone. Since I do not have too much time, I would like to get into business. Many people that know me tend to laugh because my passion is teaching midrash. And I have this tendency to say about every midrash that I teach that this is my most favorite midrash. And it turns out that I have too many of those. But this is really my most favorite midrash. And I think that by the end of today's session, you'll have to agree with me on this. The midrash that I'm going to be learning with you appears in source number 2. You have the English translation. I'll stick to the authentic Aramaic. But it's a very famous midrash. And I trust many of you know at least bits and pieces of it, if not the whole story. But today I would like to focus on the details in the Midrash because I think that they show an amazing story with us. The Midrash talks about Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. I have to say Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, a very famous Amora, Eretz Israeli, lived in Eretz Israel. And his passion, his obsession, I would even say, was seeking for Mashiach. We're talking generations after the destruction of the Second Temple. And Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, in a series of Midrashim, is quoted, is described as seeking for Geulah, trying to promote Geula. And I would say that this is the most classic Midrash, where we're looking for Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, we're seeing Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi looking for Mashiach. And the Midrash starts off by saying, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi ashkach le Eliyahu, meaning he meets Eliyahu, dehave kaimei apitcha demarata de Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Where does he meet Eliyahu? At the entrance to the cave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Do you see how we compliment each other? Did he talk about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai? You see, it's wonderful. Anyways, at the entrance to the cave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, we'll see in a second that most probably Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi was in the entrance of the cave of Rabbi Shimon Bochai because he was looking for Mashiach. Now, it's funny, sometimes I ask my students, you know, had we hypothetically had to look for Mashiach, to welcome Mashiach today, whereabouts would you look? Where would you go in the land of Israel? So usually I get the Kotel, Har HaBayit, stuff like that, maybe Tzfat. But the entrance to the cave of Rabbi Shimon Bochai is a special place. What were Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi doing there? So he's looking for Mashiach. He doesn't find Mashiach, but he does find Eliyahu Hanavi. One thing that must be mentioned before we get into the details of the Midrash is that Eliyahu Hanavi, in a series of Midrashim, is portrayed as wandering around entrances to caves, and that is by itself a very interesting message, maybe tied to the personal biography of Eliyahu Hanavi, and to his story, and to his cave, and to the dialogue that he had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as portrayed in Sefer Melachim Aleph. But going back to our discussion, Rabbi Yoshua finds Eliyahu, and for him that's a great thrill. We know that Eliyahu Hanavi plays a very significant role in Midrashei Chazal. He is, like I say, like the Meshiv in the Yeshiva, right? You know, if you're learning Seder Erev in the Yeshiva, and there's some dispute in the Gemara that you cannot resolve, you don't understand, you go to the rabbi who sits in the corner, and he knows the answer. He provides the solutions. We've just read on Shabbat HaGadol, the Haftarah of the Navi Malachi, Hinei Anuchi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyah Hanavi, Veheshiv Lev Avot Al Banim, Velev Banim Al Avotam. Eliyahu Hanavi has a very special role. He returns, he makes the hearts closer. He returns the sons to the fathers, but Lehashiv in Hebrew is not just about returning, it's also in provision of answers. Eliyahu knows all the answers. That is why when we have an unresolved dispute in the Talmud, we end it with the word teko, meaning we don't know the answer. But in the future, teko, tishbi etaretz kushiyot uveayot. Tishbi will come and resolve of all questions. Rabbi Yoshua meets Eliyahu, so now he has a great opportunity to ask him the $1 million question. What about Mashiach? When is he coming? Says Rabbi Yoshua to Eliyahu. He says to him, I'm skipping two lines. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. How funny is this, says Rabbi Yoshua. Shnaim ra'iti ve'kol shlosha shamati. I see two individuals. Who do I see? I see myself and I see you, Eliyahu. But I hear a third voice. Today, if a person would come and say to me that he is hearing voices, that would be slightly concerning. But it's very interesting. We'll see that this message repeats itself in the Midrash. Rabbi Yoshua is hearing a voice. What kind of a voice? We'll see in a second. But as I said, because Eliyahu knows all answers, says Rabbi Yoshua to Eliyahu, Amar le'eimat atei Mashiach, When will Mashiach come? Says Rabbi Yoshua to Eliyahu. Answers Eliyahu, Zil Shai Leledide. Go ask him. Why are you asking me? Go ask Mashiach yourself. Wonderful. I'm looking for Mashiach. I wish I could have asked him. Vehe Chayativ. Where is Mashiach located? Answers Eliyahu, Apitcha Deromi, at the entrance of the town of Rome. How beautiful is this midrash? Where was Rabbi Yoshua looking for Mashiach? At the entrance of the cave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Where in fact is Mashiach? At the entrance of the town of Rome. Why, by the way, did Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai go to his cave? Who was he running away from? The Romans. So in fact, it's 180 degrees opposite of where Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi was looking. He was looking at the entrance of the cave. Where in fact, Mashiach is at the entrance of the town of Rome. What does that mean? Well, we have a lot of questions to answer. But I'm progressing. Says the Midrash, Umay Simane, many people are situated at the entrance of the town of Rome. How shall I recognize Mashiach? Answers Eliyahu, oh, that's very simple. Yatev ben Ani Esov lechalaim, v'chul anshar v'asir b'chad zimna, yushar echad v'asir echad. Explains Eliyahu to Rabbi Yoshua, who is situated at the entrance of the town of Rome? Those who are ill, those who have leprosy. We know that leprosy is a very contagious disease, and the people who suffered from leprosy were taken away from the town so as to not spread the disease. Now, as we know, leprosy is a terrible disease, and there are lots of wounds, and they tend to be infected. So what people do is that they shed off their bandages and put fresh ones in their stead. But Mashiach is different. Mashiach also has leprosy, but instead of taking off all his bandages and putting fresh ones instead, Mashiach only takes off one bandage at a time. Why? Says Mashiach, Amar din mami baina de lo yakev. When they call me to redeem Am Yisrael, I want to be ready. I don't want to say, wait, I need to put my bandages on. I'm ready. I'm on call. By the way, I'm not going to get into this, but a few years ago, I taught this midrash in our shul in Ranana, in a bat mitzvah program that I do with the girls in our shul. And a 12-year-old asked me an amazing question. She said, wait, I don't get this. She said, I always thought Mashiach is going to come and call us. But here Mashiach says, when they call me to redeem Am Yisrael, I want to be ready. If Mashiach calls us, who's calling Mashiach? Which is a great question. We'll try to answer this, but I'm not sure I'll provide an answer. Okay, continuing. Now Rabbi Yoshua knows where Mashiach is situated and how Mashiach looks. He takes the first flight to Rome, not to be taken literally, but he does come to Rome and he meets Mashiach. Azalegabe, he comes to Mashiach. Amarli, Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. Rabbi Yoshua is very excited. He comes to Mashiach, he says to him, Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori, and answers Mashiach, Amarli, Shalom Alecha Bar Levi. Mashiach recognizes him and his name, Ben Levi Bar Levi. I'm not going to get into the significance of that. Rabbi Yoshua asks Mashiach, Le'emat Atemar. Okay, when are you coming? I'm waiting for you. Answers Mashiach, Hayom. Rabbi Yoshua is besides himself. He's so excited. He said, not a problem, not a problem. Getting back home, calling his wife, calling his talmidim. Let's get ready. Mashiach is coming today. He's preparing, he's cooking, he's dressing. There's a song in Israel of Shalom Chanoch, and it goes as follows. Mashiach lo ba, Mashiach gam lo metalfen. Right? He's very upset. Mashiach does not show up. And therefore, after anticipating for Mashiach and not seeing him arrive, Ata legabe Eliyahu, he goes back to Eliyahu and he has complaints. Mashiach promised me. Says Rabbi Yoshua to Eliyahu, Amale, I'm skipping a few lines. Shakure ka shakerbi. I don't even need to translate that. What is Rabbi Yoshua saying to Mashiach? To Eliyahu, Mashiach, lie to me. Da'amarli hayom atina velata. He said he's going to come today, and he didn't come. Says Eliyahu, Amar lehachi amar lach. When Mashiach told you, I'm going to come hayom, you were so excited, you didn't listen to the end of the sentence. The word hayom is just the beginning of a long sentence. And it's actually a conditioned sentence. Mashiach said to you, it's a verse from Tehillim, hayom im Bekolot ishmau, meaning I shall come today if you adhere or if you listen to his voice. You were so excited, you heard hayom, you went away. But there is a condition here. Only if you adhere to his voice will Mashiach come. Hayom. By the way, how beautiful is this midrash? How did the midrash start? What was Rabbi Yoshua saying? The first thing he said to Eliyahu, he said, "I see two, but I hear a third voice." How does the midrash end? By Rabbi Yoshua saying, or Mashiach saying, or Eliyahu saying to Rabbi Yoshua, "Mashiach will come if you listen to his voice." So today I would like to open this up for discussion and ask, what does it mean to listen to voices? Again, in the same sense of the matter, what does it mean to listen to voices? For example, if I am a soldier, Kravi in Golani, Mu'al, as they say in Hebrew, fighting for the protection of the land of Israel, am I listening to his voice? Definitely. People do this with a passion of listening to his voice. If I'm Neturei Karta protesting against Israel Day Parade on Fifth Avenue, am I listening to his voice? No doubt in my mind that those who are protesting against Israel Day Parade believe passionately that they're listening to his voice. So what does it mean to listen to his voice? By the way, whose voice? Well, trivial, I would say, Hashem. But what does that mean, to listen to the voice of Hashem? So we have a lot of questions to answer, but I would like to start with the beginning. As we said in this Midrash, Rabbi Yoshua is looking for Mashiach at the entrance of the cave of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai, which makes it very relevant to our days, right? We're now on the 15th day of the Omer, but we're getting there, we're progressing towards Lag BaOmer, towards the 33rd day of Lag BaOmer, the day when, according to tradition, Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai exited his cave. And my question to you was, why did Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai find himself or wind up in the cave to begin with? And in order to have a better understanding of this, did one talk to you about the cave of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai? Did he discuss this in his previous shiur? My husband? Okay, so good. He left this for me. I'm very happy. Let's read very briefly just the first portion of the story of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. I know many of you know the story. The tragedy is that sometimes we have a distant recollection of Midrashim that our parents or our preschool teachers taught us, and we grow up and those stories grow up as they were shared with us when we were 6 or 7 years old. But today I would like to focus on what seems to be the insignificant details of the story, which I think shed a lot of light on the essence of the story of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. Why did Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai flee to the cave? And from this we will have a better understanding of what Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi was doing at the entrance of the cave of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. What does that cave symbolize? So let's read. Source number 3. This is a quote from the Gemara in Masech Shabbat. Again, you have the English version to your left. I'm sticking to the original Aramaic. The Gemara talks about 3 important Tanaim. This is a generation after the destruction of the Second Temple. Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai was a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. Very devastating. The land is dominated by the Romans. And look at this discussion. Deyat ve-Rabbi Yehuda ve-Rabbi Yosef ve-Rabbi Shimon. 3 sages. Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, which Rabbi Yehuda is this? So many people say to me, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is on a much later generation. This is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. Had I had more time, I would have shown you that the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon here, we know that they were bnei plukta. There are lots of machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai, and not all, but many of the machloket, the halachic machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, along with the hashkafa machloket, are systematic, meaning they all cling to the same hashkafa, Rabbi Shimon on one hand and Rabbi Yehuda on the other hand. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. This is Rabbi Yosef ben Chalafta, who in a minute will become Rabbi Yosef Haglili, because he's going to be exiled to the Galil. And the third is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay. Now that we know who we're speaking about, let's start. The Midrash also says, the Ativ Yehuda ben Gerim Gabayu, along with them sits a Talmid of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai called Yehuda ben Gerim. By the way, he was a precious soul. Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai cherished him very greatly. He was very appreciative of Yehuda ben Gerim. Nevertheless, in the story, it turned out that Yehuda ben Gerim is the one who was the snitch, meaning he promoted that story to the Romans. But let's continue. Says the Midrash, Patach Rabbi Yehuda Ba'amar, starts Rabbi Yehuda and says, Kama na'im ma'aseihem shel umazo, how great are the actions of this nation. Which nation? Rome. The Romans. Tiknu shvakim, they've constructed bridges, markets, and baths, and spas. They have promoted modern technology. This is great, because up till now it was greatly time consuming for me to get from one side of the river to another. And now I have a bridge. How great are the actions of the Romans? Rabbi Yosef shatak. Rabbi Yosef does not respond. He chooses to be silent. By the way, had Rabbi Yose had nothing to say, he wouldn't have been quoted in this midrash. This is what we call shtika ro'emet. Silence is a message, but we're not going to be speaking about the silence of Rabbi Yose today. That's a different shiur. Mitzvah Hashem next time. Na'ana Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai ve'amar, answers Rabbi Shimon and says, kol ma shetiknu lo tiknu ela letzorech atzman. Whatever the Romans did, they did for self-centered reasons. Tiknu shvakim lehoshiv behem zanot. They've built markets to promote prostitution. Merchatzaot le'aden behem atzman. The spas, the baths, for their own self-pleasure. Gsharim litol mehem mechasim. Already back then, there were taxes and tolls on bridges. It's amazing, by the way, how it became much more expensive in the past course of this last 2 years. But we'll talk about that on a different occasion. Rabbi Shimon is very critical of the Romans. By the way, it seems as if Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are not arguing over the facts. It's not even a machloket that the Romans built a bridge and that it's easier to get from one side of the river to another. The question is, what is the intention? Says Rabbi Shimon, because the intention, there's a problem with the intention, with the kavana, I'm not going to be supportive of it because it's done for the wrong reasons. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, who proposes a very pragmatic approach. He says, what do you care about the kavana? If it helps you, make use of it. You're not idealizing the actions of the Roman. You're just saying, I'm making use of this. Anyways, to make a long story short, הלך יהודה בן גרים וסיפר דבריהם ונשמעו למלכות. So now יהודה בן גרים, the Talmid of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, starts sharing this discussion with others, and apparently this information reaches the Romans and the Caesar. אמרו, now the Romans are very upset. So what are they saying? יהודה שאילה יתעלה. Look at the playing with the words. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, יהודה שאילה יתעלה. יהודה, who had praised us, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, shall be promoted. Yosei sheshatak, Yosei, who did not protest against the words of Rabbi Shimon, but rather was silent, yigle letzipori, shall be exiled to Tzipori. Shimon shegina yehareg, Rabbi Shimon, who went against us, shall be executed. Just imagine it, all over the country of Israel, wanted signs, right, with a picture of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai, and he has to flee for his life. Where does he go to? He takes his son, Rabbi Elazar. Where do they go to? Okay, so this is where it gets challenging. Because we remember the cave. But there's a whole story that went on before they go to the cave. And that's what I would like to focus on. Says the Midrash, Azel hu uvrei, he takes his son Rabbi Elazar, tashu bei midrasha, and they go into the Beit Midrash. And not only does the Midrash tell us that they go into the Beit Midrash, the Midrash also provides us with a lot of information. Kol yoma havamaitilu udeveitu rifta v'chuzat demaya. Every day, the wife of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai gives them, comes to the Beit Midrash, brings them a loaf of bread and a mug of water. They eat and they drink. But then, says the Midrash, Kitakif Gzerata, they see that the Romans are very serious and that they're not going to give up. I'm going to read this very briefly. Amar le'ivrei nashim da'atan kala lehem. This is a very disturbing message to many of the women in this crowd, but I'm not going to get into that. I'll just say that in this context, Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai is very concerned that the Romans are going to torture his wife and force her to unveil their hiding place. So they decide to run away from the Beit Midrash without telling the wife, and now they go into the cave. And now the Midrash tells us, not only did they go into the cave, but the Midrash also tells us what they ate and what they drank. They ate from a carob tree that miraculously grew in the cave, and they drank from a fountain of water that miraculously emerged out of nowhere. Very equivalent, right? A loaf of bread as opposed to a carob tree. The mug of water as opposed to the fountain of water. Why all these details? What does that tell us about Rabbi Shimon? About the cave? Why all that information? I'd like to stop here. Let's think about this for a second. What differentiates, what's the difference between Beit Midrash, a loaf of bread and a mug of water on one hand, a cave, carob trees or the fruits of a carob tree, and a fountain of water? What's the difference? This, the first, the Beit Midrash, as well as the loaf of bread, as well as the mug of water, this is all a product of man's doing, of technology. Same technology, maybe not necessarily the same, but the same idea. Same technology that Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai went against. Whereas the cave, the carob, the fountain of water, that is all natural. It seems as if Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not just going against the Romans, he's protesting against the secular world, against matters of mundane, against people who are leading a pragmatic life instead of doing what? When it mentioned this in his our words, instead of passionately learning Torah. According to Rabbi Shimon, there are numerous quotes about this, but I'm not going to get into this. A person in an ideal world should sit and learn Torah 24/7. And he explains this. He says, Zachu, meaning if we're merited, Melachtam na'aset bidei acharim. Our chores, our work, our labor is done by others. I'm still waiting for those others to do my work, but that apparently did not yet happen. Maybe we're not zachu yet. Lo zachu, if we're not merited, melachtam na'aset bidei atzmam. Then b'di'eved, you know, no choice, you have to go to work. Ideally, one must dwell in the learning of the Torah. This is why we all know that at the end of the story, when Rabbi Shimon and his son ascend from the cave, and they see people plowing and harvesting and dealing, leading a pragmatic life, they say, "Menichim chayei olam v'oskim b'chayei sha." Instead of focusing on eternity, these people are focusing on whatever is very, you know, insignificant, and they burn with their eyesight whatever they see. They cannot tolerate the world. Yes, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you object to modern technology, you object to physical labor, you object to the secular world, but you're using it. You go to the Beit Midrash, which was built by men, you eat a loaf of bread. In the future, the bread will grow on trees, according to the Midrash, but today we work for it. And you drink your water from a mug. Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you're right. Tzodkim, I want to be the authentic thing, the real thing. I'm going to the cave. No one built the cave. No one even planted the carob tree. It's all miraculous. I'm drinking from a fountain of water. And to me, whenever I describe this midrash, tears. I literally have tears in my eyes because I feel that so many people today call themselves Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, Toratam Omanutam, but how many can authentically lead a lifestyle that is equivalent to the lifestyle of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the cave, which is authentic Torato Omanuto? But I'm going to leave that aside. I think we have a better impression of what the cave represents. The cave is the holiest, the most pure, the most untouched place that we can think of. That is the cave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The opposite of anything that's secular, pragmatic, earthly, that is the cave. And when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai starts his journey, he starts his journey there. Because if you think about this, where would we like Mashiach to stem from? From that holy place, from that cave, from whatever that cave represents. But apparently Mashiach is not there. Mashiach is in fact situated at the entrance of the town of Rome. Now today, Rome seems like a very nice place. There's wonderful antiques and great shoes. But back then, when this Midrash is being given to us, the Romans are not less, and I'm saying this, sometimes when I say this, especially on the week of Yom HaShoah, people have reservations, but I'm saying this and I completely identify with every word I say. The Romans to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi were just like the Nazis are to us. No difference. They've shattered the Jewish settling in Eretz Israel. They've slaughtered tens and thousands of people. They've exiled us. They've enslaved us. They have destroyed our Beit Mikdash. And until today, 2,000 years, Baruch Hashem, we're on our way there. But over 2,000 years took us to recover. These are the Nazis. And when the Midrash is saying Mashiach is at the entrance of the town of Rome, that's a terrible message. What does that mean? By the way, I don't have too much time, so I'll just say this very briefly. I trust many of you know the book, Emma Banim Smecha, of Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, an amazing, outstanding book, Emma Banim Smecha, Rav Teichtal, was one of the leading, prominent leaders of Jewish Orthodoxy in Hungary. My family has a personal connection to this because my great-grandfather, Rav Schlesinger, was close with Rav Teichtal also in Hungary. My great-grandfather was in Budapest, and Rav Teichtal mentions him in his book, Why am I saying this? Because Rav Teichtal himself perished in the Holocaust. He managed to write the book Emma Barim Smecha in the Ghetto. And this is a book of Cheshbon Nefesh. As we know, most of the rabbinical orthodoxy in Hungary objected the Zionist dream and went against this and preached against going on Aliyah. And during the war, Rav Teichtal does a sort of a Cheshbon Nefesh and makes this, has this epiphany, this realization that we should have returned to Eretz Yisrael. That's the real thing. That is our goal. That is our destiny. An outstanding book. Highly recommended. Why am I saying this? Because in that book of Teichtal describes that at one point his Talmidim come to him in the ghetto and say to him, where is Mashiach in all of this? For 2,000 years we have begging, we have been begging, we have been crying, we have been davening for Mashiach. Where is Mashiach in all of this? Answers Rav Teichtal. He says this in Hebrew in his book. Amarti lahem, I said to them, שהמשיח נמצא במרתפי הגסטאפו. That Mashiach is at the chambers of the Gestapo. The entrance of the town of Rome. What does that mean? I'm not even talking about Mashiach having leprosy. That's not a pretty sight. That's not how we anticipated Mashiach to look. What does that mean? In order to have a better understanding of this, I would like to share with you. This is a very well-known methodology that I'm always using when I teach Midrash. You know, today when we can highlight using word processes, it's very easy for us to highlight a message, right? We use exclamation marks, we change the font, we enlarge the fonts, we underline messages. So it was very funny for me to read my daughter's SMS's, Eziofi, 5 exclamation marks, because one is not enough anymore, we need to really emit. It's very funny because I was just talking with one of the people who was organizing some of our meetings in New York, and she kept on saying the word amazing, amazing, amazing. So I kept asking one end, does it really mean amazing? Or is the amazing of today the okay that we had 20 years ago? But whatever, we're not going to get into that. That's a different discussion I'm very obsessed with. I don't know why, but we'll leave that aside. Back in the old days, when this Midrash is written, and before that we cited orally, there are no exclamation marks, so there is no way to stress a message. So one of the methods that our sages are using, and this is the method that our sages are deducting from the Torah itself, is by repeating a certain element, a certain idea. Once that idea is being repeated by repetition, that emphasizes the message. So I'm asking you the following question. Which term, idea, concept repeats itself in the story of Rabbi Yoshua and the Mashiach? Which element? Okay, I'll make a long story short, I'll answer. Okay, the first thing is the kol, if you remember, right? The Midrash starts off by saying, Rabbi Yoshua says, wait, I see two, but I hear a third voice. And towards the end of the Midrash ends by saying, Mashiach will come today if we adhere or if we listen to his voice. So the first concept is kol, voice. The second concept that repeats itself is the word petach, as an entrance, as an opening. Rabbi Yoshua looks for Mashiach at the entrance of the cave. By the way, the word entrance seems out of context. Why wouldn't he just look at the cave of Rabbi Shimon? Why the entrance? Why the emphasis of the Petach? As opposed to that, Mashiach is in fact situated at the entrance of the town of Rome. Again, Petach. Kol and Kol. Petach and Petach. Okay. Think of a verse in the whole Tanakh, okay, I'll narrow it down, in Shir HaShirim, that includes both Kol and a Petach. Very famous verse. Chapter 5 of Shir HaShirim, we've just read it, yeah? If I'm not mistaken, I'm not going to, okay, I'll make a long story short. To the best of my recollection, is not authentically a verse from the Shir HaShirim, but rather what we say, a piyut and motzi Shabbos, but originally taken from Shir HaShirim. But I was referring to the verse Kol Dodi Dofek Pitchili, which is the story of the maiden and the beloved. It appears somewhere. Look at how we've skipped a page. Source number 7. Shir HaShirim. The maiden and the beloved, as many of you know, the story of Shir HaShirim is a love story between the maiden and the beloved, but it's actually a mashal, it's a parable. The maiden is Knesset Yisrael, Am Yisrael, and the beloved is Hashem. According to that story, there was a passionate love story between the maiden and the beloved. And then tragically, they were torn apart one from another, right? The beloved was went away, and now the maiden cannot locate him, doesn't know where he went to. And this is how the fifth chapter, we all know of Soloveitchik's very famous essay, called Dodi Dofek, he says the highlight of Shir HaShirim is the fifth chapter. And it starts off with the following words. Ani yeshena velibi er. In other words, the maiden is saying, I'm asleep, but my heart is awakened. And then the maiden says, I always say, by the way, I don't have time, but I'll say this very briefly, that only mothers can understand what does it mean to be asleep, but your heart is awakened at the same time. You know, my kids always call mommy at night, because why waste a word that will not be, you know, have any impact. Kol dodi dofek, pitchi li achoti ra'ayati yonati tamati shiroshi nimlata al kutzata rasisei la'al. All of a sudden, in the darkness of the night, she's awaiting the return of the beloved. And she hears a knock. And it's the voice of the beloved. Kol todi dofek pitchili. She hears the voice of the beloved. Pitchili achoti ra'ayati yonati. And she, the beloved is saying, just open the door. Had you been the maiden, hypothetically, what would you have done? Not too complicated. I would have gotten up and, you know, opened the door. But the maiden is reluctant to open the door. She says as follows. Pashatati et kutanti echachal b'shena. Rachatzti et raglai echacha atanfen. Lame excuses. I've just undressed. I'm just in my pajamas. How will I dress again? What? How will you dress in the morning? Just put something on and open the door. We can imagine it was a tent or, you know, a hut or something. It wasn't a real house. I'm afraid to soil my feet. Is this what you're concerned with right now? Your beloved is back. Open the door. Dudi shalach yado min chol umei hamu alav. Kamti ani liftoach ledudi v'yadai natfu mor v'etzbaotai mor over al kapot amanul. If you remember the asimonim, the tokens in Israel, there was a saying back in the 80s, Nafal ha'asimon, right? That all of a sudden, oh, she understands that she misses out on something here. Kamti ani liftoach ledudi. I went up to open the door to my beloved, but now what happens? Dudi chama kaval. By the time she opens the door, he's gone. So she calls out to him, but she cannot find him. And then she starts wandering in the town, looking for the beloved. And the tragedy does not end there. Meaning the guards of the town maim her, hurt her, brutalize her. And this is how this chapter basically, this is the message with which this chapter ends. My question to you is, why did the maiden not open the door? And it seems to me that the Midrash about Rabbi Yoshua and Mashiach, by emphasizing the word kol and petach, is in fact attempting to provide an answer to this question. I'll say this very briefly. My grandmother passed away exactly 2 years ago. Naomi Hershkovich, she was an outstanding woman, definitely preceded her time. She was a Holocaust survivor. She came to Israel. She was about 15 years old. She went to seminary. She became a teacher. She had two children, although she underwent experiments in the camp and was positive that she'll never have a family. And after raising her two children in a wonderful way, one of them is my father, she decided she's going to go back to university. She studied psychology. She became a psychologist. She went to university along with my father. She studied psychology, she became an outstanding lecturer, and she established a teacher's seminary in Israel, a very famous one, Michlelet She'anan, and became really an outstanding scholar. Why am I saying this? Because my grandmother had a weekly shi'ul, where she provided psychological analysis of the Tanakh, an amazing shi'ul. She passed away 2 years ago, she had ALS, very tragic at this age, and a few months before she passed away, one of my visits to her, I sat with her and I said to her, you know, grandmother, you've never explained to me the story of the maiden and the beloved. You as a psychologist, how would you interpret the story of the maiden? Why did the maiden not open the door? My grandmother answered in a very typical way. She wrote it to me. She said in Hebrew, "Hayiti muftat lu ha'ra'aya hayta putachet et hadelet," meaning, I would have been surprised had the maiden open the door. That was her answer. In other words, she was even giving me muso. You know, had it been you, you wouldn't have opened the door. And statistically, those of you who had suggested that, had it been you, you would have opened the door, no chance. We wouldn't have opened the door. And in fact, too many times, the beloved is knocking at our door and we don't open it. On a personal level, definitely on a national level, we do not open doors. Why? That's the big question. I would like to very, very briefly provide an analysis to what my grandmother had suggested. And this is an analysis suggested by Rav Soloveitchik. Many people know Rav Soloveitchik's answer and his essay called Dodi Dofek, but this specific analysis is less quoted. People don't necessarily recognize this. But I'm focusing... Where is the... Okay, source number 8. Unfortunately, I don't have the Hebrew, which is the authentic source. But source number 8, you see it, the end of the first paragraph. I'm reading 4 lines from the end of the first paragraph. What is the gist of the Song of the Songs? Yes? If not the description, says Lev Soloveitchik, of the tragic and paradoxical delay of the maiden, drunk with love and overwhelmed with yearning. I would like to stop here. Rav Soloveitchik calls the story of the maiden a tragic story as well as a paradoxical story. Now, the tragedy is obvious. Why is there a paradox? It's also very clear why there's a paradox, right? She's anticipating his arrival. When he comes, she doesn't open. When she gets to open, he's no longer there. The guards brutalize her. You know, it's all a paradox. But it seems to me that this is not the paradox that Rav Soloveitchik is referring to. The paradox that Rav Soloveitchik is referring to has to do with the words drunk with love and overwhelmed with yearning. This is how he portrays the maiden. Let's explain this. There's a movie in Israel, for whoever's Israeli here and had seen that movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. For those who haven't, it's not such a great movie, so don't bother seeing it. I'm telling you the essence. Anyways, the name of the movie is Chole Ahava Mishikun Gimel. That's the name of the movie. It's a movie that takes place in an institution for people who have some mental issues, and it cheers the lives of those people. And amongst those people is a person who had a girlfriend. Her name was Evelyn. One day, Evelyn dumped him, and ever since she dumped him, he became depressed. And he found himself in that institution. Now, he has a minhag. Every evening, 7 o'clock in the evening, I've seen this movie so many years ago that with each shiur that I deliver, it gets a new life of its own. So I'm providing details here that most probably have nothing to do with the authentic story, but majorly. He goes every evening, 7 o'clock in the evening, goes to the front lawn, and he starts weeping, crying, yelling, begging. He says, Evelyn, al telchi, al tazvi oti, al telchi. That's his minhag. By the way, true story. A few months ago, I gave the shiur in Ranana. After delivering the shiur, a woman approaches me. She says, I have to tell you, my name is Evelyn. I made aliyah from France. Wherever I go in Israel, people ask me what my name is. I say, Evelyn. They say to me, Evelyn al telchi. Now, I thought that this is just the Israeli way of greeting, you know, Olim Chadashim. But so if you're Evelyn and they say to you, Evelyn al telchi, you'll know where the source is. Okay, well, going back to our discussion. Very briefly, Evelyn al telchi, al tazvi oti al telchi. Okay, that's the story. Now, his friends see this, and they cannot tolerate this. It's very difficult for them. They decide to take action. They call Evelyn. They call flesh and blood Evelyn, and they say to her, we don't know whether you've been aware of it or not, but he's really devastated. He misses you. Just come and pay a visit. Just be nice. And she decides to come and visit him. She comes to that institution. They page him down. He comes down. He sees her. He is in shock. He cannot utter a word. She starts asking him, are you doing? He answers yes and no answers. And they're standing there for 2 amazingly awkward minutes. And then he looks at his watch. And he says to her, I have to go. And in front of her wandering eyes, he goes to the front lawn and starts crying, Evelyn al telchi. When I saw this movie, I said, intoxicated with love and overwhelmed with yearning, this is the maiden. What's the story of this guy, of this guy and Evelyn? He's no longer in love with Evelyn. What is he in love with? He's in love with a fantasy. He has been obsessed with Evelyn up to a point that she became greater than life. She became a dream. Up to a point that when Evelyn, flesh and blood Evelyn, is standing in front of him, he cannot even see that. Because he's in love with a dream. That is the maiden. Why did she not open the door, says Rav Soloveitchik? What's the paradox? She didn't open the door because she loves the beloved. She's overwhelmed with love. She's intoxicated with love, up to a point that she's no longer in love with the beloved. She's in love with a fantasy. And when the beloved knocks on the door, she says, "This is not the voice of my beloved. This is not how I imagined it to be. I thought of Yerushalayim shel Mala, something very spiritual and holy, the walls of Yerushalayim as portrayed in the Midrashim, not Shuk Machne Yehuda. Didn't think it was going to be this way. It's not the real thing. Or is it?" By the way, this is definitely relevant to our personal lives. We prevent ourselves. I always say that my worst enemy, if there's anything that was in my way in making progress in any field in life, whether it may be family, the education of my children, career, spiritual life, my worst enemy is myself. Sometimes we have this passion, we have this dream, we have this fantasy about how life should be. And when reality hits our face, that's not it. We're longing for something that will never happen because it's not real. But the beloved was knocking on the door and it was authentic. The question is, are we able to listen to his voice today? Not making conditions, not saying, "Wait, I'm not prepared. When I teach this story of the maid, and sometimes people say to me, she always had that anticipation that when he's going to come, she's going to be, you know, her hair's going to be done, she's going to have makeup on, she's going to be dressed beautifully, she's going to run in the sunset and the hair slowly glowing in the wind, whatever. But that's not reality. It's not 3:00 in the morning and he's knocking at your door, so just open up. But we're not always strong enough to open doors. To open doors. And this is exactly the story of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. We look for the coins under the flashlights. We're looking for Mashiach at the entrance of the cave of Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. We want it to be perfect, pure, untouched, spiritual, glorious. Where in fact, Mashiach is everywhere. Even at the entrance of the town of Rome. Even at the chambers of the Gestapo, in our daily lives, Mashiach, on a personal level, because Geula is, to begin with, very personal, and obviously on a national and on a global level, Geula starts today. The only question is, are we strong enough to listen to his voice? I wish you all Chag Yom Atzmaut Sameach.
Thank you very, very, very much. That was really excellent, inspiring. I'm on a plane, really. Next month for Midrashat Yom Rishon, Esty Rosenberg. The 22nd. Those of you who are interested in sponsoring, always welcome. And Rav Stav is coming the same day. Okay, it's really a very interesting month, a really wonderful month of ER. There's going to be a big shelet in the front of LMS. You'll be getting many, many emails, and I really encourage all of you to come and hear these wonderful speakers. Bye. Chodesh Tov.